Shay 45, I'm here with Shad Meshad, NVF.org, National Veterans Foundation.org. You're the founder and president. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
It really doesn't explain exactly what you do. You deal with veterans who come back from
all wars. We deal with veterans, their families, and kids. Over 31 years ago, I started this nonprofit National Veteran Foundation. And, you know, it was basically set up because my career started in the VA. I'm the pioneer of a program that's still going today under Congress, the Vet Center program.
Okay.
Here in every major city. But I wanted to set up a foundation that a person could call and ask anything from any war, not only the veteran, the family, the kids, because as I know in my work, for 46 years, you know, everybody's affected.
So you're not only dealing with the veteran, you're dealing with the son of the...
The daughter, the girlfriend, the wife, the parents. Husband. Everybody's involved.
You started off in Nam?
I started in Vietnam, 1970. Army Captain, Medical Service Corps, 1970. I'm an author on the war.
What was that? That was before my time, but it looked to me like the veterans of that war did not get the warmest. They didn't get the warmest reception when they came back.
It was terrible.
Explain that to me a little bit.
Well, the war, it was a 10-year war, and by 67, 68, particularly after Tet of 68 and then the My Lai massacre, the country went from hawks, you know, favorable for the war, to doves. And changed drastically. I mean, everybody was protesting the end. There've been movies about that change, and there's been a lot of Vietnam War movies. And what happened is after 68 is veterans came home. America was angry at the war, angry at the national leadership, and therefore confused the war with the warrior. And it became two wars for Vietnam vets, the war in Vietnam and the war coming home.
Because when you sign up for the Army, you don't get to be like, hey, I'm going to be in the Army and I think I'm going to do this and let's go fuck that country up over there.
No.
And that was during the draft as well, correct?
Yeah, well, this was a draft war. That we don't have that now. So a lot of individuals that were kind of on the rope about going, but you know, it was go in or go to jail or make, you know, cut a finger off or do something crazy so you didn't have to get in. In fact, there were nonprofit programs to help you avoid the draft or get out of the draft. But
people were cutting off fingers.
They did a lot of crazy things like that. Yeah. Pleaded, you know, then being a homosexual, you know, blind, played deaf on the test. There were a lot of today, I would say, websites where you went in and learned how to avoid going into the military.
It strikes me to the Army, the military is made up of, it seems to me like a lot of people out there are from middle class and lower. It's made up of a lot of poor people.
I'd say the enlisted men and women are primarily made up of that group, middle class and lower middle class. There are a lot of reasons for that. One is to get out of a bad situation. If you're lower middle class and you're in a ghetto, definitely a minority, it's a way to get out, get some discipline, get trained,
college,
maybe have
money
an opportunity. Money for college. Not in the Vietnam War.
No.
It wasn't too good, but today, yeah.
There's areas I go to where you see recruiters actively recruiting in poor areas.
Well, yeah, because they're going to be eager to get out of that situation. I would say most of the enlisted are from the middle class, lower middle class, ghetto areas or whatever. And most of the officers come pretty much out of college and out of the military schools like West Point.
So it's still a class system. The guy telling you what to do was the rich guy that went to the good school and the guy doing the shit work. This is a generalization.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, numbers wise, that's kind of what this reflects. I'm just trying to paint a picture here.
Yeah, it's somewhat accurate, but there's been some great officers. But my life's been dedicated to the grunts and to the ones that were enlisted primarily because they're the ones that burn the, you know, they bury the brunt of war, which is man's inhumanity to man.
Let's talk about we've it seems like we've perpetually been in some type of conflict since forever, since World War II. It looked like we've been in some type of conflict, and it continues on. We had the Gulf War, we had Afghanistan, we had Iraq. What are you seeing now with a lot of the veterans that are coming home?
Well, big difference. At least they've come home to a friendly America. I mean, they at least get a handshake or thank you for your service. Not that that is a major thing, but it compared to us, yes. But the big difference is the veterans in today, both Iraq and Afghanistan, have served multiple tours. And the other thing with those multiple tours is the majority of those in harm's way in these two wars. There's no really safe zone. The biggest killing in the Iraq war was in the green zone. Green zones in Vietnam and other areas are relatively safe areas. You only usually have kills in there. But these wars are different. With the IED war and the suicide bombers and women and children or whatever, there's really no safe place. So that creates a lot of trauma. I'm a traumatologist, an expert in trauma, one of the pioneers in what we know today as PTSD in the 70s. And they are very susceptible to trauma and also layered trauma because of the multiple tours and because of being in harm's way pretty much 85% of the time in general for both men and women serving of all branches in these two wars.
We got it's PTSD, military sexual trauma. What is that?
Well, that's the, you know, we now have about, I think it's about 14% of our military and our fighting force are made up of women. That's a big change.
Yeah.
It's a major change. And in the last 2 years, there have been close to 26,000 sexual assaults in the military on these women primarily. And that is, you know, that's unheard of. It's been brought up for the last 7 or 8 years in Congress, but nothing has really been done about it. So when these women get out, they suffer PTSD. They suffer the fact that it's usually done by
someone,
male soldiers. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to go to VA or any place where it's male dominated to go get some kind of treatment. And that's a big part of our program, trying to change that and help them know that there is a place to go to be safe and to get into treatment for PTSD.
20 veterans a day are committing suicide in America?
Over 20, yes.
That seems like a pretty large number. what is that comparatively? That seems like a big chunk from one group of people.
Well, it's not just of the Iraq and Afghanistan war. It's a mixture primarily of Vietnam veterans, which are now average age are probably late 60s, and the Iraq and Afghanistan vets. And once again, because of the treatment and the coming home and the problems that Vietnam vets suffered without all the help and GI Bill and counseling, there was no vet center program for most of their coming home, they hit the point in their lives where suicide is a good option in their minds. With the younger veterans, it's due to the layered of PTSD, the multiple traumatic experience they've suffered in multiple tours, and also the signature wound in these two wars is traumatic brain injury. If you know anything about brain injury from the LEDs, the physical damage to the brain, the symptoms are almost parallel to the emotional damage in PTSD. So if you look at the symptoms.
So if you get your head rocked, it makes you sad,
well,
depressed?
If you know all the symptoms, depressed, hypervigilant, depressed.
You see that? You're seeing this a lot in football players and stuff like that?
It's exactly
fighters,
the same thing.
It's the same stuff,
yeah,
that's coming up.
But a lot more violent.
Right.
They take personal impacts, but concussions for 500-pound bombs and whatever, it's significant trauma to the brain.
How many people are coming back maimed? I imagine we're seeing less deaths and more people missing body parts. Is that a fair thing to say, or am I off?
I think it's mostly. I couldn't tell you that. I'm not with the DOD anymore.
Yeah.
So I would say that The big issue is they come back. About 20% in the last study done, the major study, was about over 20% of those served have symptoms of PTSD. That's one out of five. That's pretty serious.
These are giant numbers.
Giant numbers. I mean, we didn't have really numbers during the Vietnam era and post era.
And I imagine if you did, they'd be fucking out of control.
I know they were because I was involved. I've been, you know, when I was involved with the Vet Center program in Congress testifying in the 80s and 90s, I think in 83 there was an estimate of 115,000 suicides by Vietnam vets. That's pretty high. But
you also
we had almost 4.5 million that served, but we're getting there pretty close to that now.
And where I'm from, where I'm from too, is we saw a lot of cats from Vietnam turn dope fiends. Like they turned to drugs,
self-medication. That's what we call it. Self-medication. Absolutely, that was the treatment for PTSD. That was the treatment for PTSD. With the National Veterans Foundation, is, you know, being a crisis and information hotline. A lot of times, you know, our hotline, we treated over 12,000. We took over 12,000 calls last year. And I would say half of them, these veterans call in from all wars and will present one problem or whatever. And as we listen to them, we find out there's three or four other things that are actually a bigger problem than what they call us about. Because as a warrior, you're taught to, you know, suck it up, be a man. And particularly if you've served several tours in the combat zone, you're pretty major warrior, you know. And it's tough to sit here and say, hey, and you don't want your platoon or your unit to know that I'm having emotional problems or whatever. So you suck it up. You see it after the war.
I guess
we see them after the war.
It's to survive in one situation, you have to be able to do that. But then once you move to a situation where you're no longer in the war, that type of behavior is not going to benefit
you. It's like a freeze-dried reaction, just like in coffee. And when you get out and all of a sudden you've suppressed and contained all of this trauma, it's got to come out. And it starts coming out with at least within the first 12 months, because, you know, you go from this complete structured job of being a warrior. Complete structure, the training, everything. It's the toughest. You learn to teamwork or whatever, and you do that, let's say, for 4 to 10 years, in which is about average of the tours of time in the military now for our soldiers. You come out, and what do you come out to? No structure, no unit, no training. You're now all on your own to figure out, how do I restructure a life? I've got all these ghosts, these thoughts of trauma, the killing, all the things that you've seen in movies, and I've got to sort of tippy-toe into your world, the civilian world, and smile and say, hey, I'm doing great. You don't have anybody telling you what to do. You don't have your three meals a day. You've got to go out and get a job.
Job placement is probably
job. I mean, hey, we're in a capitalistic society. You got to have money. You got to pay your rent.
Yeah. We got a gang of people that want to holler at you. 888-742-3345. We usually crack a gang of jokes here on the All Out Show, but today, this hour, we're doing it for the veterans. So fucking call up right now. 888-742-3345. Let's go to Alan in Florida. Go ahead, Alan.
Yes, sir. My name's Alan. Phil calling from Tallahassee, Florida, and I have been struggling, working. I am 70% service connected for PTSD, and I got a letter from my VA doctor stating that I was unemployable, but yet and still, the Veterans Benefits Association still won't recognize what the doctor said, along with all the treatments and all the medicine that I've been taking. I shouldn't be around people.
What is the long term for that? Like, is that just forever? You're unemployable forever?
Well, yes. I was told that if you are 70% higher, then you are you qualify for unemployability.
Shad, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, he should get 100%, because usually with unemployable PTSD, he needs to get his rating bumped up to 100%, which is a lot more money, too, or whatever. It's sad that he's unemployable, you know, from serving his country. And
what the fuck is he supposed to do? Alan, what, like, let's say you do get the money. Then what are you supposed to do with your fucking time? It seems like if I had money and all this time, all I'm going to do is fucking get faded. Like, I'm going to take that money and then I'm going to probably go buy a bunch of drugs and you're not going to see me for a while.
Well, Alan, this is what we do, my work, Alan. We try to get you to move, regardless if you get $3,000 to $4,000 a month, and I'm not saying that's great, and I don't know, depends on where you live. I know people that pay that much for a month's rent. So
right.
The key thing is to get in, as my jump master said, I was with the 82nd Airborne many, many years ago, and my jump master, I never forgot what he said, if you're standing still, you're backing up. And the problem with most folks that come back that have readjustment issues, reintegration issues, is in a way they stand still. They're waiting for the VA to do this, which could take forever. The ratings are different in different areas, even though they're supposed to be consistent. And you need to find, you can call our toll-free number and get some direction from us, but you need to find a life outside of your disability or whatever that may be. You don't want to remain a victim of the war and a victim of the VA being slow to address your needs. You need to go after 100%. You need to get a good VSO, and if the one you got's not doing that, then we need to fix that. And the other thing is you need to look at what you wanted to do when you got out before all this came down. And you need to try to get a life. And I know that sounds silly, but there are programs and out there, even in Florida, where you can get into and don't stand still, whatever you do, because nobody's going to be waiting on you, and your world will pass you by, and there is help out there.
NVF.org.
You go to NVF.org or 888-777-4443. We're open 8 hours a day, Pacific Standard Time, 5 days a week.
All right, Alan, hopefully that helped you a little bit. All right, bro.
All right, bro. Appreciate you.
God bless you, bro.
888-742-3345. 888-742-3345. We got a gang of motherfuckers.
Come on.
We'll take one or two. We'll jump into music. It'll give us a chance to go through some of these calls, and then we'll take some more calls. John in VA.
Hey, I'm John. I had a couple of points here. The first thing is about the sexual assault. That's kind of a big animal because the military is actively trying to prevent sexual assault for males, females, transgenders, everybody. So that's kind of something that needs to go a little deeper than we're not doing anything about it.
Because men are being sexually assaulted in the army, in the military as well, correct?
Yes.
Okay, but they don't want to, like, it's kind of don't want, hey, man, I kind of don't want to.
Well, first of all, the
up.
Command does not want to be embarrassed. This whole sexual thing, you know, and particularly in structured environments, is a dangerous thing. And the commanding officers really, it looks bad on their record to say, hey, you had 300 sexual assaults in your unit last year, and they've gone to the JAG officer, and they're being adjudicated, and all of this stuff. So
What's causing these assaults?
Well, I think for one thing, and I was one of the components that was against putting women with men. You're talking about women out of high school and men out of high school with high levels of testosterone. If you've ever been into basic training and you're sweating and whatever, young men and women have strong sexual desires at those areas. And that's all I can tell you. And I don't have the answer except look what's happened since they merged, men and women fighting together, in the trenches together, whatever. And that's my assessment.
What else did you want to say, John?
Yes, the second thing and kind of one of the very important ones is I'm active military, 21 years. I've deployed 8 times, and I'm getting ready to deploy again in November. The second deployment, this is in reference to the gentleman that was called earlier. The second deployment, I came down with PTSD. I went through a lot of crap. Didn't know I had PTSD. Again, I deployed 6 times after that. I have a family, wife, daughter, son, and my relatives, you know. And it took a while for me to realize that I had PTSD. I ended up wanting to be alone, and I wanted to deploy more because I felt more comfortable over there. But there were three things that helped me as to where this ninth deployment that I'm going on, I'm not worried about it. And it's one, I agree with you. You definitely need to talk to somebody. It doesn't have to be, you know, somebody, a 1-800 number. It can be, you know, a friend or even an associate, somebody that you need to talk to. Secondly, you cannot stand still. You have to find something to do, because if you do stand still, then that's when a lot of those problems happen. And then third, you have to have a strong mind, because in my case, and this is not for every case, because soldiers of mine have also, you know, come down with PTSD, and they didn't come out as blessed as I would say that I am right now. I really had to sit down and talk to myself and have a very strong mind to evaluate what was going on in my life, why I didn't want to, you know, talk to anybody. You know, I was ready to divorce my wife and kids and all this other stuff before I realized that I'm bigger than this and I'm better than that.
John, let me jump in.
It really helped me a lot.
John,
and those three points really worked. Yes.
What you guys keep saying PTSD. What exactly is that feeling? Like, what is that? What is that for someone that doesn't have it?
PTSD is a mental symptom that can mean anything. For me, I just wanted to be alone. I remember when Call of Duty first came out, I played that game 24 hours a day because it felt like home for me. And it's a video game.
It's nightmares. I
was very calm with that. So PTSD is a mental thing that can affect different people different ways. Some people turn to violence. Some people turn to suicide. Some people, like myself, wanted to just be alone from everybody. You know, some people, you know, they have anxiety. You know, PTSD is just a mental thing that affects people differently, depending on what type of mind structure they have.
Well, John, you covered it. I'm a mental health professional and one of the pioneers in PTSD, and you couldn't have said it better in layman terms.
Let's play a song. Come back. We got my man Shad Meshad here from NVF.org, National Veterans Foundation founder and president. We're doing it for the veterans today. If you're a vet, call up right now, 888-742-3345. Phone lines are fucking full. Phone lines are full. We got a lot of motherfuckers that are enlisted that listen to this show, and I'm glad that you were able to come by here. And we'll play one song and we're gonna take some more calls for all y'all out there. Let's go. Shay 45, we are back. I got Shad Meshad here, NVF.org. We're doing it for the veterans today. Fucking 20 veterans a day are committing suicide in America. Countless vets suffer from PTSD, traumatic brain injury, military sexual trauma. This is going back as far as fucking, yo, you know, you still got some cats from Korea. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you got motherfuckers.
We do.
So if you've seen war, it's brutal, and it's hard on your fucking brain. It's hard on your heart, and it's hard to come back and be around regular shit.
Couldn't have said it better. Could not have said it better.
Because the way to win,
that's the bottom line.
Yeah, to win a war, you got to be fucking savage as shit, and
you're trained that way.
And it takes a toll on a person.
We just don't deprogram them when they come home.
Why is that? Why?
Once you leave the DOD, they're through with you. You've done your soul. You take off the uniform. They're finished. All they do is train warriors. We do not transition these men back. We don't transition them back. And that's why they get in so much trouble, either legally or whatever. They act out because they have all this stuff jamming in their brain. They get fucking crazy from the war playing in their heads, and then they got to sit and talk to folks like you and try to look normal and listen to music.
And
it don't work that way.
I remember my cousin came back. He was a ranger. He served in Afghanistan way back in the day, like in 2002. And like, yo, I'd take him out to the bar, and yo, he couldn't. His back had to be against the wall at all times. He had to check every fucking
standard.
Standard. He was on, like, and I can't wrap my head around that shit. I was out there, I'm trying to pull bitches, and he's over here making sure that nothing bad was going to happen.
But that behavior saved his life in the combat zone.
Exactly.
He'll never let go of it.
Exactly. Yeah, he could
be dangerous in the bar. That's what he's thinking. He's checking it out. He wants to know how he can take care of himself, and if you're his friend, he'll take care of you. He's got to position himself.
And that's something that is that's something that somebody like me doesn't. I don't think about. I don't realize that.
Because you're not programmed that way.
Yes, that's correct. Do you think people coming out of the military should look, man? Even when cats come out of jail, they have to go to a halfway house for a little bit and go through some shit like that. Do you think how helpful would it be for someone coming out of the military to have a therapist lined up, to even have, like, this is how you go get a job. These are basic skills for the world.
This is mandatory. We would not have 80 to 90% of these problems if we didn't have transitional counseling, both emotionally, financially, the whole planning. Remember, these guys have come out, and women have come out of high school primarily. Remember, we were talking about the enlisted.
Yeah.
From all these areas. They come out of that, and all they know is become a trained soldier. They spend 10 years. They come out. They're on the streets. What do they know about the civilian world? Absolutely nothing. Mm.
Let's go to phone lines, 888-742-3345, 888-742-3345. Brandon in Jersey. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, Jude. How you doing, man?
Man, we good, man. You got Shad Meshad here from NVF.org. And if y'all can't get through, man, just go to the website. There's a ton of answers here for you. I just want to let cats know that they're, like, you're not alone. Go ahead.
I appreciate you guys letting me talk here. So I'm a veteran myself. I got blown up back in 2013, suffered PTSD, TBI, got a bad back, carry on, did my tour. I got deployed a couple months after getting blown up and whatnot. And that whole mentality of, like, suck it up and, you know, move on, that's how most of us function. You know, I lied to my therapist, to the doctors, to everything so I can deploy because, you're trained, you're programmed to kill, that's what you want to do. So I did all that. But that messed me up even more, man. And I got out of active duty. I'm still serving, doing the National Guard, the part-time thing. I've been on God knows how many medications, talk to this person, talk to that person. On the outside looking in, I got a good life. I got myself an amazing job, a job that a lot of people wouldn't be able to do. I'm a network engineer. I got a beautiful wife, got a kid, about to buy my first house. But everything, everything still hurts on the inside. And it's like, I can't get that stuff out of my head no matter how much, I keep my feet moving forward, keep goals, all that, man. So I just, what else can us guys do? Aside from dealing with medications and, giving it our all and just still not feeling adequate enough.
Hey, look, you call the foundation and talk to me one-on-one because we don't have that kind of time here, but I this is what we do, and you definitely need to deal with that inside because you could implode. That's a lot you're carrying, and God bless you. Luckily, you got a good job, a good wife or whatever, but down the road, this will eat you up. It will cause heart disease. We've seen everything. I mean, I've lived this for 46 years as a mental health officer in Vietnam and all my work after. So take care of that. Give the hotline a call. Ask for Shad, whatever.
How hard is it for vets to get into therapy? And what's the level? Are these good therapists that they're talking to at the VA?
We don't know. We don't know that. We don't know that. But we do know.
I can tell you firsthand, like, in the military, it's a joke. Even you're talking about, like a transitional program from military to civilian. It's in place. But everything with the military, it's all about numbers. And it's all about, like, covering their ass. Like, yeah, we have this, this program in place. But it doesn't help you. And that's the thing is. And we get it, we're soldiers, we got a job to do, but when you're trying to transition, it's a scary thing to go from, warrior to civilian.
They don't need you anymore.
Exactly.
You're kind of discarded, huh?
Programs, right, like I said, it's in place, but, is your chain of command going to allow you to go to these, meetings and these briefings? And, when I got out, I wanted to go to every class I could to make sure, I was doing everything right and that I was going to be set up for the best, but it's nothing to them. They just kind of kick you in the dirt, and as soon as they find out you're getting out, you're a piece of shit to them. You don't matter anymore. And then you get out, and you think, being a civilian, easy as cake, right? No, you get out, and it's even scarier than being at war.
It's another world.
Getting blown up. It is, and, you feel like you got the weight of the world on your shoulders. You got your wife, your kids, your friends, your family. You feel like you got to hold them all up. And even though they're there holding you, you never let go of that, you know, I got to support them. I got to protect them. You know, even like you were saying with your friend, you or your cousin, hypervigilance. It's a bitch. Like, you know, going out just, you know, on a date with my wife or anything, you know, I got anxiety, you know, as high as can be. My eyes, my head, I'm on a swivel the whole time just thinking of every situation. And it's like such dark situations that you don't want that stuff in your head, but it is. And you're, you know, you're preparing for stuff that most likely is never going to happen. But, you know, that's, I guess that's just how you're programmed. And it's no way to live. And it makes it real tough to function out in the real world.
B, let me jump in. I got a question. I got a question for Shad. A lot of these cats are talking about being injured. Look, man, I fuck around with painkillers all the time. I used to a lot. I used to really like opiates, oxys, fucking Vicks, whatever. I could snort that shit up. But, yo, it fucks with your moods.
It does.
And there's a ton of veterans being prescribed these painkillers. What is that doing for it's it seems to me like it's helping their leg or their back, but what is it doing for their brain?
It's nothing. It just numbs you and it sets you back. Earlier I said if you're standing still, you're backing up. And what it does, it makes you stand still. It may squelch a lot of the anxiety and stuff like that. But you're not present. You're not present to transition into civilian life, to your wife, to your kids. So there's a danger there. There are treatments, and I will deal with that. Anybody that wants to know about it, call the foundation. But there are treatments that overcome that without medication. Medication is over-medicated. Particularly, there's been studies. It's been all in the news about the VA or whatever. That's there. It's not treatment. It should be a temporary.
These are band-aids for bullet wounds.
Well, yeah, but it should, you know, temporarily cool you down, but not live on it and try to function. You can't do it.
You can't function long term on
absolutely
painkillers.
Not. Make that clear.
Jason in Washington.
Hey, what's up, Jude?
Go ahead, man. You got Shad here, nvf.org. If y'all can't get through.
So my situation's a little bit different. I joined the Army. I was a combat medic. And what ended up happening was I was off post and I got hit by a drunk driver. And so I had my orders and everything like that. And when it came time to deploy, you know, they didn't let me deploy. And so I've always felt like really guilty about that. And it's affected my life. And I was just wondering if there's been any other kind of situations that you've heard of like that.
Is that like survivor's guilt?
Absolutely. And that, sir, that's treatable. And once again, you just need to get to the right clinician to do with that. That's survival guilt. That's very common. I mean, I've even seen vets that were in a secure area their whole tour or whatever and came back and were, you know, felt guilty because they hadn't been outside the wire, if you know what I'm talking about. And it's common. But, you know, I could sit here and tell you that's bullshit, but that's how you feel. And so we need to treat it. And that's in your brain. And guilt is a powerful thing. So it needs to be dealt with.
Right. So it's because I mean, this is actually the first time that I've actually admitted it.
Well, that's a great step. That's a great step.
Or even talk to it about it or anything like that. Because, like, the reason why I joined the military was so I could get, you know, go to college and all that. So, like, when I got out, that's immediately what I did. You know, I went on, I graduated from Berkeley and got my degree. And, you know, I've always, you know, I had bad dreams and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I was just, you know, I always thought, like, well, maybe it's just, you know, maybe I'm just making this all up and stuff like that.
No, it's guilt. You know? It's guilt. It's real. It's a human condition. People have
all right,
it
Jack.
For a number of reasons.
Yo, what about women, the wives, the girlfriends? We had someone up that we lost her call, but her man came back from war. He's dealing with that PTSD. How does she cope with that? How does she encourage him to go get some help?
She has to encourage him. If not, she needs to go, because what we call it with spouses and things like that, with a spouse that has PTSD, it's secondary trauma. They get contaminated from his primary PTSD. It's in the books. It's written about. I lecture about it. It's real. And it's, you know, it's just real. It has to be dealt with. And I hope that person, she calls the foundation, calls the non-pro, our foundation, and finds out what she needs to do, because she needs to do something.
Eli,
this is a
Kelly.
Bad situation.
Go ahead, Eli. Eli.
Hey, yo, what's up? Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that.
Go ahead, bro.
Hey, so first off, yeah, I know we've been talking about service members and whatnot, and I am too, a veteran currently serving in the reserves. I deployed four times on active duty, and I've been going 100 miles an hour since 2000, you know, and I started being a civilian contractor, and I was doing protection work out in Afghanistan. I got injured out there 2 years ago, and I've been at a standstill since then, trying to deal with, you know, getting my injuries in order. My back's been jacked up, my legs, everything else, and now I'm finding out that I actually do suffer from PTSD. I mean, I thought it was just, you know, anger issues, mood swings, whatever the case is. But I talked to a civilian therapist because that stigma of actually getting diagnosed with PTSD, I'm worried about, you know, how that is going to affect my professional career, because I work with a lot of, you know, ex-tier one cats and a lot of, you know, real hard asses. I mean, me myself, I've just been in the right place at the right time. I've been lucky. But now I'm dealing with a lot of issues, and I'm starting to see that, you know, I've had four relationships deteriorate, you know, two marriages fail, and I'm on my third one now, and it's just,
What were the problems? Hard, you know? What were the problems that you kept seeing happen in these marriages, Eli?
It was anger, mood swings, and it was just, you know, I can go on to, you know, I grew up in East LA, and it was a bunch of BS, and I just thought, you know, maybe it was just me not being able to be an adult about shit. But, you know, when I'm with my troops and when I'm out deployed and when I'm with working, you know, I'm really professional. I skyrocket really quick. You know, I'm really on point. But at home, I fall apart. You know, I'm really good at listening to my soldiers, but not good at listening to my wife or to my kids. Mm. I really get really pissed off real quick. And it's just, you know, I got to a point, to a header last year, and I you know, seek counseling for myself through my civilian networks. And coming to find out, they're telling me that, yeah, you know, you suffer from anxiety, bipolar depression, PTSD, and they put me on all these drugs and whatnot. And, you know, I haven't reported none of this in my reserve command because I don't want the...
You don't want it to fuck with your money.
Exactly. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go back to work as a contractor in Afghanistan, because now I'm suffering from not only these physical issues, but being at a standstill for these last 2 years has put me in a mental strain where I'm realizing now that there's something seriously fucked up with me, and you know, what should I do? And I guess the main question is, have you heard of this from contractors that served and now are, you know, are kind of cut our ties to active duty and are suffering from these issues? You know, what do you recommend I do moving forward?
First of all, it doesn't matter whether you're you know, a contractor or whatever. You got PTSD, it sounds like. The symptoms, and my major one is anger, your isolation, moving from relationship to relationship. You need to get treatment. You know, and treatment is not medication per se. It sounds like you're in enough control with yourself, but you need to get into some good anger management. Do you have a vet center? Or are you located somewhere in the country where you can get to a vet center? There's over 300 of them. I'm the father, and I pioneered that program years ago under Jimmy Carter, but they have counseling for this, and it's free, and you need to get into it, because once again, you'll implode down the road. You're young, and you got a long way to go, but you need to deal with this, because you got a long journey, and you've got a lot of issues that you need to deal with, and that's inside of you.
We got a couple. Let's take a few more calls. Hey, y'all, I might speed you along just because we're pressed on time. But call up 888-742-3345, 888-742-3345. Let's go to Danny in Oklahoma City. Go ahead, Danny. Danny. Oh. Muggs in Massachusetts. What's up, Muggs?
Yo, hey, what's up, Jude? Hey, so quick thing. I'm a retired veteran myself, and I currently work at a program where, Jude, you brought this up earlier, where I'm seeing a lot of veterans, you know, who suffer from PTSD. They are struggling with the opiate addiction, which up here in Massachusetts is rampant. And so I was wondering, like, in your practice, Chad, like, have you seen, like, have ways to get around or helpful hints of dealing with veterans that are addicted to opiates?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, we get calls from all parts of the country and outside the country. Veterans are everywhere, as you know. And they're all trying to get off opiates and other medications so they can be present, you know what I mean, and focused. And yes, there's alternative therapy. I've been involved in research on that from the last 25 years, or other techniques or stuff that doesn't involve drugs and no side effects. So yes,
let me ask you this, and I know I don't want this to sound bleak, but is this something that, like, look, man, this is like, look, man, I deal with depression for myself, and I just for me to deal with it, I just have to understand that my baseline is going to be a bit lower than other people's baselines. And then I operate from there. Do these guys, do they just have to, is this just something like, okay, this is going to be with me for a while?
Not, it'll be with them for a long time if you or others don't get treatment. There is treatment for depression without drugs, because I do it. So I know, and I know it's effective.
So, but it's always going to be there if you're not being treated, I guess.
Exactly.
It's lingering.
It's exactly. As I used to use the example of breast cancer, you know, years ago, women were, you know, they kind of like nervous about saying it, and all of a sudden it's stage four. It doesn't go away. You have to clear it out of your brain.
Scott, we'll end with Don. Go ahead, Don.
Hey, how you doing?
Go ahead, man. We good, man. Thanks for calling up. We got Shad right. Meshad okay. here.
Okay. Listen, my father was in the Vietnam War, and he came back with PTSD, and it didn't get diagnosed until we were grown. As coming up as kids, he had mood swings. We went through a lot of trauma with him, and even right now, I have it. My brother has it. My sister has it. And, you know, because of the trauma that he went through in the Vietnam War, you know, he brought it back. And, you know, it was untreatable back then because, you know, back then in the 70s and the 80s, they didn't talk about it.
Well, it didn't exist. That's why they didn't talk
exactly.
about it.
It was just shell shock. They didn't even have nothing for it.
Yes, there you go.
Exactly, shell shock. And be honest with you, I mean, I can't be around people that's yelling. I have, like, if a plane coming down too close, I freeze up. And I was thinking it was me, and then when I was going, you know, getting therapy, you know, my therapist said, well, have you been in any kind of war or anything? I'm like, no. And she was like, well, I think you have some PTSD. And I'm like, huh? I didn't know what she meant. And then when she broke it down to me, you know, she was like, well, you know, your father been traumatized, and it just trickled down to the family. And, you know, as family members, we don't talk about stuff like that. And even in today's world, nobody talks about it. You know, it's not open like it is now. But back then it wasn't open. But now it's open. But, you know, coming up as kids, we didn't know what to do. We thought it was normal.
Yeah,
but
it was a bad time. It was secondary trauma. And there's thousands and thousands of cases of
it's,
that.
It's funny. I'm sure, you know, I grew up around the same, like in a violent household. And I just thought that that was normal. Like, I just thought that being having a violent reaction to a situation was just what a man does. Like, this is how you're supposed to act.
Exactly.
And it's hard to deprogram oneself.
And you may have delayed traumatic stress. Just telling you that it doesn't go away. And look with how it's been. It's tough dealing with that.
And we got a few people that have been calling up, and they're just saying they've been having troubles getting into the VA. The wait is extremely long. What do people do when you're fucking, yo, dude, like if you got 20 motherfuckers killing themselves every day and there's a fucking 5 week long wait, what are these guys supposed to do?
Well, that's why we're around. I mean, if we can get the calls in, you call the foundation. I know you don't have time, but we'll talk about that and find alternative things. We'll help you navigate the VA, which is a big problem. That's probably 30% of our calls nationwide, helping them. A lot of you young guys or the young guys that come in don't have a lot of patience. You know, they were told this is it. Just walk in. You got it. No big deal. And they find out it's the opposite. So they walk away and don't use it. So you need a buddy system. That's what we are, buddy system for you. By the way, my whole team are vets. Anybody answers the phone, been there,
they've
done,
been there,
done
they
that.
Understand.
Okay.
You're not talking to somebody that's like, oh, no. I think I understand what
Absolutely.
You're saying. They're fucking
Even our women
there.
Outreach specialists, my women outreach specialist, Leapy Kim, 8-year Marines.
Goddamn, we just keep getting these good-ass calls.
Well, you got a great-ass program here, people. This is a needed thing. There needs to be a station that just deals with this to help these folks out.
Monica in Ohio. Go ahead, Monica.
Well, what's your advice for a spouse who's dealing with a veteran who's in denial that he has PTSD when it's obvious?
If he won't go, ma'am, you need to go to a vet center. I don't know where you're located, or get treatment however you can. If you got an insurance policy, because you'll get secondary trauma, and you need to go regardless if he does, because you don't need to go down with the ship, so to speak. And you got to take care of you first. You know, it's like the old thing on the airplane when you get in and they say, okay, if there's a problem with oxygen, put yours on before your kids. In other words, take care of yourself so you can manage the situation. It's a heavy situation you got, and you got to manage it. And the first thing is you need professional guidance.
Fred in Atlanta, go ahead. Fred.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Fred.
Yeah. Yes, I'm a Gulf War veteran, and I committed some crimes when I first got out before PTSD was diagnosed. Is there any repercussions or anything that I could do to get that cleared up?
There are legal nonprofits that work with veterans around the country. If you need to get a number, I'm here at the station, but you can call our office and ask for legal advice about your discharge and your situation.
Okay.
You need to get someone in your area, and that's one of the things we do. You need to talk to someone that can review and litigate your situation.
Can people go to nvf.org and volunteer as vets as well to help?
They have to be reviewed because, yes, absolutely. We can
if they fit the criteria.
Yeah, because it's serious. I mean, yeah. No one calls our line to tell them they're having a good day or whatever. They're all in crisis.
Shad, look, man, I couldn't thank you more for doing this for these cats. You know, whether or not people agree with our foreign policy, agree with the wars, these are still fucking... These are our brothers and sisters that are coming back fucked up, and they need some help.
I want to thank you, first of all. Yeah. What you did today needs to be done by all major news media around the country, because so many of these veterans, as you saw, and you're overwhelmed now, and you don't have the time.
The phones
will keep coming.
Yeah,
because
they keep going.
They need to have you got to get to the right place. And one of the things that we do at the foundation is we direct people where they are to where they need to go. And that's the big problem. It sounds simple, stupid, but it's simple, stupid, and they need to know. And they need to know these answers, which you did on the show today. So there you go.
NVF.org, NVF.org, Shad Meshad, the founder. Thanks for coming in, man. I appreciate you, bro.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's go.